Hello there, faithful Fat Guy Forum listeners. Before we get into this week's episode, I just want to remind you that there are several ways you can support this show. First of all, just the fact that you're downloading the show, listening, that helps a lot. But if you could rate and review the show on whatever podcast service you're using, I would greatly appreciate that because that gets the show in front of more people. You can also share it with people you think might benefit from the show. If you are interested in investing more in supporting the show, there's a few ways to do that. First of all, in the show notes of every episode, there are links to companies and products that I am an affiliate for that I use on a daily basis as a part of my own personal healthy journey that I feel I love sharing with all of you. And if you use those links and codes, you save a little bit and you also generate some revenue for the show. Another way is, of course, the Patreon. And the Patreon for the Fat Guy Forum is not only a way for you to show some financial support for the show, but you also get access to bonus material. And right now that includes 58 bonus episodes where I continue my conversations with the guests in the after show. And you also get a say in how the show evolves and grows. I'm thinking of changing the Fat Guy 5 soon, and I would love to get the input of all my Patreons on that. So if you are interested in that, sign up for one of the tiers of the Patreon that involves a payment. Yes, you can sign up for free. I don't know why Patreon allows that, but you can do that, but you don't get access to any of the fun stuff. So sign yourself up. Link is in the show notes. And now let's get on to this week's new guest. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the next episode of the Fat Guy Forum. This is your host, Gormy, and I am happy to be with you once again here on a new episode of the show. With me today, I have a new guest. So new episode, new guest, all good stuff today. His name is Jason Grant. Jason, how are you doing today, man?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm glad we're getting to talk. I found you a little while ago on Instagram and, you know, have enjoyed following your journey. And I'm excited to bring it to the people today. So let's get into it. Tell us, man, what qualifies you to be on the Fat Guy Forum?
Yeah, well, as people can tell from my Instagram, I've been on a bit of a weight loss journey. So if we go back to the beginning, I've always struggled with my weight. You know, as a kid, you know, I was a chubby kid. I think, I didn't fit in standard, you know, clothes. I was what they called husky size, like a lot of kids are. But, you know, as time went on, you know, I was fairly healthy. When I was 7, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which was, that's a huge, huge kind of like life change to all of a sudden. Everything about your life, your diet, everything's pretty much changing at this point. So from that time on, my parents, they were really, really good about keeping me on a good diet. We ate a lot of grilled chicken. I feel like just about every night it was some variation of grilled chicken and, you know, a very like small portion of a starch, like a very small baked potato or something. And so, you know, from about 7 until I was a teenager, even though I was on the overweight side, I was in a very healthy place. My blood sugars were under control. My A1Cs were very great. As time went.
Yeah, I don't want to stop you, but I think there, and this is probably, you know, going to be hard to believe, but I think there probably are people out there that don't know the difference between type 1 and type 2 diabetes. So sure. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, so type 1 diabetes is basically, to put it in the most simplest form, is your body kind of just attacks your pancreas and it prevents it from, you know, no longer making insulin. So the difference between type 1 and type 2, type 2 diabetics, they deal with a lot of insulin resistance. Sometimes their pancreas makes too much insulin. A type 1 diabetic, they are getting no insulin on their own capability. So in order to, you know, basically survive, you're having to inject insulin into your body, and that gets very tedious, especially with a child and figuring out the doses. And so that's why as a child it was just easier to eat healthy and kind of stay on plan, because you can keep that better blood sugar control. And I'm very thankful for that. You know, a lot of my peers have, you know, the beginning stages of retinopathy. you know, some kidney issues. And I'm very thankful that I've got none of that. And I credit that a lot to my parents just keeping me on plan at that young age.
No, I understand. And I bring it up because I have two very close cousins that are type 1 diabetics, and one who was diagnosed, I think, when she was 2 or 3. And, you know, so she now is in her 30s. So it's been something that, you know, she's been dealing with for a long time. But the family, you know, seeing what her parents went through and, you know, having to monitor and just kind of the adaptations that she had to make, you know, so I think it's good for people to hear, because I think there's a perception about, you know, type 2 being more prevalent when we're talking, you know, specifically the issues we talk up about on this forum, you know, on this right. podcast. So I think it's good for people to hear, you know, from someone that's coming, you know, dealing with a different situation that is completely separate from type 2.
Absolutely. Yeah. And a lot of the perception is, when you mention diabetes, though, that, hey, you've brought this on yourself. You know, it's your choices that have led to that. And, you know, with type 1, it's, to be quite honest, there's all these different medical theories of what may have, like, sparked it in people's bodies for their pancreas to just stop making insulin. But nobody really knows 100% why. You know, and to be quite honest, for me as a kind of larger kid, it was kind of weird even going to, like, the diabetic groups, because a lot of the other type 1s were, you know, very bone skinny, some athletic. So it's kind of odd, you know, you got this chubby kid at the type 1 meetings. I guess moving right on to the story.
Yeah, back to your story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you know, as a teenager, you know, you get your driver's license, you get a little bit of freedom. And, you know, I kind of found myself, you know, not wanting to stay on plan. I had, throughout my childhood, I'd had, like, no added sugar, no, like, candy, anything like that that wasn't sugar-free. In fact, growing up, my parents actually owned a store called Sugar Free Express, and they actually stocked nothing but sugar-free products, and, you know, they shipped them all over the country. So I, you know, probably ate my weight in sugar-free saltwater taffy, which that's a whole nother conversation for what gastrointestinal effects that has. But, you know, so I stayed away from the sugar. But, you know, when I was a teenager, on my own, driving around, you know, it's easy to say, oh, I'm gonna go get a double cheeseburger, because this was back when, hey, you got a double cheeseburger for like $1 at McDonald's. And so it'd be easy to go through and be like, oh, well, I'm going to get 3 double cheeseburgers and call it a meal. And hey, I've ate a meal for $3. Or, you know, one thing that I always loved, and it's a controversial candy, but, you know, especially this time of year, you see Peeps. I love Peeps. But those things are like, they're just pure sugar. And so I was buying those things by the pack and just downing them. And I got to the point where my A1C was 14. And if you don't know much about A1C, we'll just say that 14 is definitely not where you want to be. You're on the way to complications. You know, the family doctor that I was going to at the time was like, man, you're going to end up losing, you know, probably not just one leg. You're going to end up losing both of your legs if you keep on going down this path. So I didn't, you know, of course I didn't listen. And so I just kind of continued on and into my, you know, late teens, early adulthood, just ate whatever I wanted to eat. There would be times when I would go on a quote-unquote diet, lose a little weight. You know, I remember doing Atkins, but I don't think I ever did it from a place where it was healthy. You know, I would say I did Atkins from a very unhealthy spot of, hey, yeah, I can just eat meat and cheese, so I'm going to go through Wendy's and get 8 double cheeseburgers without the bun, and, you know, hey, that's a meal. Not really considering, hey, well, you know, looking at the calories, that's still a lot of calories on top of everything. So I would do stuff like that. You know, used to be like my favorite place to eat when I was like on Atkins was Golden Corral, and, you know, you can really just freaking overdo it at a place like that, just grabbing steaks and chicken and all that stuff. So I never really understood, I guess, moderation. But yeah, so going on and off diets, just not really ever getting to where I like needed to be health-wise until, I guess fast forward a little bit to now. And over the past 2 years, I've been on a weight loss journey, and this is actually the first time that I have been on a journey for this long, and which is good because I'm hoping it sticks. But part of it is I fell in love with going to the gym and just became really obsessed with, you know, gym culture to the point of, you know, I would just sit on YouTube or Instagram and I would watch these, you know, other guys who are getting out there and building muscle. And I was looking at like, you know, what are they eating? And so I was like, oh, you know what? I should probably eat more like some of these guys, you know? And I noticed that they're eating, you know, they're eating clean things. They're eating real foods. They're not, you know, they're not driving through Chick-fil-A and getting two sandwiches and fries and then going and working out. So I was like, oh, maybe I need to change my diet since I enjoy going to the gym. We've got that out of the way. So I've got the movement. So now I need to change the diet because, you know, they say it's 80-20, you know, diet, exercise. And so I've kind of found my spot where I've been adjusting what I've been eating, really, really emphasizing getting protein in. That's been really the core of what I've been doing is making sure that I get, I think I'm trying to aim for about 250 grams of protein a day. I admit I don't always hit that goal because it's hard. You don't really realize that, you know, how little protein is in the typical foods that we eat. And so, you know, you can only drink so many protein shakes because eventually you're going to get to the point where you just want to throw up from them. I've been on this journey. I've lost at this point, 152 pounds. My goal is to lose another 150, maybe give or take a little bit. Cause I've also kind of got this side goal of putting on muscle. I joke around and I tell people that like, I want to be a brick wall. My, you know, growing up, it was always like, oh, I want to be small. I want to take up less space. I don't want to be in the way. And now I'm kind of like, yeah, I want to be in the way. I want to be big enough that people are scared to call you fat, you know? So there's definitely been that shift of perspective and how it's kind of like all coincided with my diet, exercise regimen and all of that. And, you know, as a result, my A1C is now at 6.5. It was at 6, you know, but I've had a few like hiccups back and forth with it. But I would say that overall I'm in a good spot. I went to the endocrinologist 2 weeks ago and, you know, honestly, she was like, you're getting close to this picture of health that I wish all of my patients had. And that like really, really surprised me because I've never had a doctor tell me, you know, that for the most part, you're healthy. So I was kind of shocked.
Yeah, that has to feel good, man. I want to go back a little bit, you know, to the start of your journey 2 years ago. Like, what, you know, so you're down 150 pounds. You know, what do you know what your heaviest weight was?
Heaviest weight, it was about, it was almost 600 pounds. I believe it was 596. I might be 1 or 2 pounds off on that, though.
Well, I think that's, you know, 596, 595, 600, you know, you're in that neighborhood, you know, that's where, you know, we were at. What was, when you were there, like, what sparked you making a change, you know, having gone, you know, had some unsuccessful attempts at dieting and getting bigger, like, let's make it this question, you know, what was life like for you, you know, before you started working on this physically?
Yeah, so I would say life was tough and really, it was to the point where I was having to learn how to adapt in order to survive and, you know, just do ordinary things. You know, I was at the point where I would get out of breath just bending over to pick something that I dropped. And, you know, that's a tough place to be in. And, you know, like one thing that we don't, you know, you don't want to talk about really, but it's real for a lot of people is, you know, personal hygiene, you know, and it was to the point of I'm going on Amazon and I'm buying, you know, special tools just so that basically, you know, I can wipe my own butt and, be able to take a fulfilling shower and not feel like I'm, you know, dirty, you know, so getting to that point of almost, you know, helplessness. And, there was one instance that like really, really sticks out to me as to why I started my journey. And we had, me and my wife and in-laws, we had went to like visit a beach for a day because they live kind of down close to the coast. And, at my heaviest, walking on sand was definitely a challenge. You know, you sink into it. It's just, it's not easy. So I would always just kind of like stand around like, you know, on the boardwalk or whatever and just watch everybody else go and have fun. Well, my wife, she took a little tumble walking back up from one of the dunes, and I felt helpless because here I am, I'm her husband, and I can't, you know, I can't physically walk down there and help her up and help her, you know, get to where she needs to be. And you know, as a spouse, that just puts you in like one of the most like helpless situations, you know?
Yeah. And that's why these things are hard to talk about, because that's the reality. You know, that's, you know, when I relate a lot to you talking about the beach. Like I was forced, I'll say forced in quotes, by a friend to go to the beach once when I was much heavier, and I knew it was going to be hell. And I was telling them, I'm like, this isn't a good idea. You know, this isn't a good idea to get me out on the sand and get me into the water in the ocean. Like, this is going to lead to some trouble. And the waves were nasty that day, and I got knocked down, and I just physically couldn't get myself back up in the water and needed like three of my friends to help me get back up. And I was like, the whole time I'm like, I told you this was going to, you know, like in my head, it's like, okay, I knew this was going to happen. This is what I told you was going to happen. This is my worst nightmare. I'm going to be stuck in the ocean forever. Like, just let me float away.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But even the hygiene side of it, I've talked, you know, with a lot of guys on this show. I mean, I remember one of the very first episodes of the show, I talked about those challenges myself. And I was like, do I really want to admit to these things, you know, publicly, you know, talk about what I used to carry around with me to help, you know, because even back then, this, you know, we're going back probably 20 years at this point. And the idea of there being easily available, like wiping aids and things along those lines, just didn't exist. Like, you could find them through medical supply stores, but Amazon didn't even really exist as a big thing then. And so I used kitchen spoons that I carried with me, basically. And the number of people that responded and said, I deal with that too. Like, I've never talked to anyone else about this. Like, it's one of those things too, because I think you also, and I don't know if you can relate to this, like, those adaptations we make in our lives, like sometimes, especially when we come out of them, it's like, why was I willing to make that adaptation? Like, what was going on in my head that my first thought was, I need to find a way to, instead of changing what I was doing with my body, let me find a way, you know, to make this work and keep it going. Like, it's wild when you really get into it. So I understand that place of, you know, it's not always, it can be hard to talk about, but I think it's also important for people to hear and understand, you know, get context and understand what was going on. Like, was there one thing that made you say, okay, now I, you know, this is the time that I have to do this, or was it just a culmination of all of that?
You know, it was really just a culmination of, you know, struggling, you know. I mean, I could go on. I mean, there's a long list, you know, from having to buy seatbelt extenders for a brand new car that we bought because, hey, the seatbelt doesn't fit, or, you know, that same car, you know, the electronics in the seat that I typically sit in, you know, somehow went out, and, you know, the whole like electrical system of the chair had to be replaced. Well, you can only assume that, hey, you know, it was probably because of the crushing weight that kind of knocked that out. You know, it's little things here and there that adds up. And it's like you said, you know, we're making these modifications and we're just slapping Band-Aids on everything instead of addressing that core issue.
And I one of the things I love in your story, you know, is that you were talking about was falling in love with the gym, and also falling in love with the gym before you were like, because I think usually it's the other way around. Like, people are like, I need to 100% get my food in line, and then I'll think about the gym. You know, I'm not going to go into that place. I'm afraid of it. You know, all of those things. Like, what was it like for you, you know, getting into the gym? Like, did you have fears about, you know, being, you know, everyone always talks about, like, are people looking at me? Are they, you know, do I not know what I'm doing? Do I not know what I'm doing? Like, what was your experience, you know, getting to that place of falling in love with it?
Yeah, so, you know, I feel like it's a little bit of a hit and miss. I mean, I will say going into it, yeah, there's going to be some people who are looking at you. I think part of that might actually be kind of the culture of the gym that I was going to. You know, the gym that we started at, they brag that they are like the no judgment zone gym or whatever. But to be quite honest, it is full of some of the most judgmental people you've ever seen. And, you know, I don't know. So, but getting into the gym was definitely a hurdle. My wife started going before me, and she had got to the point where she was enjoying it, and she, you know, wanted me to come along. I think I was probably a member of the gym for a good 3 or 4 months before I ever made it inside, because I would say that I was going to go work out with her, and then I would chicken out. I would end up sitting in the car or dropping her off to go run an errand or something, because I didn't want to go on in there and, you know, potentially make a fool of myself. But once I got out of my own head and got into the gym, I found, like, you know, this is the greatest thing ever. You know, I was, you know, going back to childhood, a typical fat kid, hated organized sports, hated PE. PE was like my least favorite period of the day. You know, who would have thought that I would be in this spot where I work out nearly every day, and the days that I take a rest day, you know, I feel like I miss it. But, you know, there again, nobody ever said, hey, you know, picking up heavy things could actually be a sport. So there's a little bit of difference there, because it's fun. It's a rush. You know, it's great. Pop on those headphones, listen to some angry music, and, you know, throw things around. But yeah, it definitely took a progression. You know, starting out in the gym, I kind of hung around in this little circuit area where they just kind of like have the machines in a circle, and you just go through and you do these little machines. And, you know, they call it like a 30-minute workout. But, I mean, honestly, when you're overweight, it's probably going to be more like a 50-minute workout, just because you're exhausted in between machines, and then you got to wipe them down and all that. I started kind of like moving out and going more towards, you know, the weights that were on the floor where everybody else was. And I stopped hiding in that little, you know, almost private room to the side, and got to where, honestly, I kind of outgrew the gym that I was in. And so then we moved on to another gym that has, you know, squat racks, Olympic, you know, deadlift pads, and all of that kind of stuff. And that's where it kind of like all clicked that, like, you know, this is fun. This is amazing. You know, and I love where we're at now, because I feel like the people at this gym are serious about working out, to the point where if you're in there with them, they're not going to judge you. They're going to encourage, you know, be supportive, and that's a great thing. You know, I've even had a couple people come up to me who have, you know, seen my journey on Instagram, just because, you know, I post so much of my stuff out there, that they've, you know, they've recognized that, and it's been good.
Nice. Which I think an important thing in there is like that idea that you start where you're at and you progress. Like, I know you're talking about Planet Fitness as one of the original gyms, and, you know, I am very much, you know, there's a lot of hate directed towards Planet Fitness out there for a lot of different reasons, but that's where I got started. And I think, you know, one, they're always they're everywhere. So that's a great thing. You know, like you're going to find it, you know. And the thing for me, that the reason I was drawn to Planet Fitness, because it was the only gym near me that was open 24 hours. Like everything else was either, you know, 15 to 20 times the price or just not open great hours. Like it was always weird to me that gyms didn't open till 9 a.m. And I'm like, but if you want to work out before work, how do you do that? And I guess, you know, maybe they don't have a clientele that does that. But I think you're right, like, understanding that, yes, Planet Fitness can be a less serious gym, and I think that's almost, like, why you see more judgment there, because not everyone there is, like, as focused as you might see at other gyms. But when you're in an environment, whether it is a Planet Fitness or another gym, where people are focused on their own goals, they're not really focusing on what other people are doing. If anything, if you're going regularly, people enjoy seeing you go regularly. Like, they, you know, regardless of who you are, like, it's that whole, you know, smile and nod with people that you've known for years and you never know their names. Like, you're just in that connection, knowing that you're all working on bettering yourselves. You're all in that place of trying to move yourselves forward. So, you know, I definitely can understand that for sure. So getting in and falling in love with the gym, you know, starting to, you know, obviously I'm sure you were getting stronger, obviously, you know, kind of outgrowing the resources that one gym had and moving to another, like, and then starting to fine tune what you're eating. Like, when do you feel like it all clicked together for you over, you know, on this path that you've been on?
I think everything clicked. Shoot. I would say it probably clicked about 2 summers ago. That's when everything was like, okay, this is working out. You know, I was still at Planet Fitness at the time. I was emphasizing protein. But it has been a progression. I will say that, you know, like even this year, I've made modifications and changes to how I do things. You know, I haven't had any added sugar since January the 2nd of this year. And, you know, I can't say that's made a huge difference in my weight loss progress, because I was losing weight and still eating sugar. It went in moderation, of course. But I will say that, you know, as far as like inflammation and stuff, I'm at a better spot. But I always like to say, you know, as I don't avoid sugar because I'm a diabetic. You know, there's type ones, they eat sugar, it works for them, you know, whatever. But it doesn't work for me. I cannot keep those numbers under control if I'm, you know, eating a Snickers bar. It ain't going to happen. So yeah, it's still one of those things where I am like fine tuning every aspect of it, you know, step by step as I go, you know. And I think, especially early on in working out, you know, like I mentioned about the circuit area, I would find things that I enjoyed doing in the gym and I would do those like repetitively over and over and over. And I never really branched out. And it's been, I guess, really in the past year that I've gotten to where, you know, I've learned that I've got to work out other parts of my body, which it's kind of funny because everybody talks about guys and how, you know, they want to do upper body, but they want to skip leg day. And, you know, that's one thing it took me a while to get to that point where I wanted to actually exercise my legs. And now I'm learning, okay, this needs to happen. And there's reasons behind it. You know, you want to build up your quads, so you've got knee stability and all that good stuff. So yeah, it's definitely been something that I've had to learn a lot over the past 2 years, and I'm still learning. And, you know, honestly, next year this time, who knows where I'll be? I may have, you know, completely overhauled what I do. Who knows?
Right. Well, that's what it's about. Like, and that's one of the reasons why too. You know, I'll share this from the podcast perspective. Like, I like talking to guys that are at all stages of their journeys. You know, whether it's someone who hasn't even got, I've had guys on that haven't even figured out how they're going to get started. I've had guys on that are years out from their success. I've had guys out, you know, on that are in the middle of where they're at, you know, in terms of working on major goals. And I always love the discussions with someone who's kind of in the thick, no, you know, pun intended, of the process, because I think you have a greater clarity on the importance of that learning and adapting and trying new things and getting rid of the things that aren't working and finding the things that are working, and even saying this worked at this point, and I'm going to try this now and see where this, you know, moves the needle. Like, what are the things that are getting me to the place that I want to be? You know, I think it's great to hear that. I'm curious, you know, from the perspective of someone who is type 1 diabetic, you know, does that impact, you know, your working out, like your approach to nutrition? Like, is that question making sense? Like, because like workouts affect blood sugar, you know, in a person that doesn't mm-hmm. have that challenge. Like, I'm just curious, like, the impact it has for you.
Yeah, so type 1s are all different, where our bodies work all differently. Many of the type 1s I know, they actually, when they work out, their blood sugar wants to elevate, you know, to, you know, 200, 300. I'm the opposite. I start working out and it is like my blood sugar will drop, you know. I've been in situations at the gym where my blood sugar has hit 40 and everything's spinning and I think I'm going to like end up passing out. So, you know, one thing I've learned to do is I keep sugary snacks in my gym bag so that those are with me if, you know, the worst case scenario, I've got to use them. But I've kind of like pre-planned and I've learned what works to eat pre-workout. And what I do is, I do eat carbs. I don't do keto or anything, but the carbs that I eat, I usually eat them earlier in the day, specifically around breakfast time, so that those are in my body before I go to the gym. And it's basically just trying to get ahead of that blood sugar drop before it happens. So I don't eat sugar. So I'll eat oatmeal, like Walmart. They're the only place I know that actually has sugar-free oatmeal, not just low sugar. They actually have a sugar-free oatmeal. And so I buy oatmeal pouches from there, and I eat those with a little bit of blueberries before I go to the gym. And that's my pre-workout. And then when I, of course, after the gym, like so many people do, that's when I'll eat my protein. And that protein kind of helps, you know, even everything out. A lot of diabetics, they actually get a blood sugar rise from protein. I know diabetics who, if they drink a protein shake, they may as well have, you know, eaten a candy bar or something. But when I eat like a protein shake, I've got no impact on my blood sugar. So I'm lucky in that aspect. So yeah, it's been interesting and kind of having to like fine tune and figure out what works for me, because there's just so much variations in type 1s and how people's bodies behave, and it's kind of crazy.
Oh, well, I was going to say, that's the wild thing about it. Like, knowing that, well, and especially like for someone dealing, you know, who is, you know, lives with type 1 diabetes, like, when you hear one person say, this is what I do and this is what 100% works and what every type 1 diabetic should do, the reality is like you're saying, it may have an opposite effect. And there's no way to say this is why this is having this, you know, like, I'm sure biochemically it could be broken down. You could have a discussion with, you know, a medical expert on it. But those variations, it's a great example of how that happens. And it happens to all of us. Like, it is that thing where there are people that follow a certain way of eating and see, you know, see someone else having success with it and they're trying it themselves and it's just not working out for them, you know, even from that, the way their body responds to it. Like, it can be murky waters to navigate for every person, but more so when you're dealing with a condition, like you said, if your blood sugar drops to 40, it's not just like, oh, you know, I feel a little bit, you know, I feel a little bit off. I need to do something about that. It can, you know, there can be some serious scary effects going on.
Definitely. And, you know, and that's kind of the funny thing is there's a lot of like tribalism in type 1 diabetes, because they're one of the most famous diabetes books is written by Dr. Bernstein. And, you know, he prescribes using a long acting insulin paired with a very low carb diet, which from what I remember, it seems to be even more restrictive than keto. There is, you know, absolutely, you know, pretty much just eating meat and cheese, and, you know, even eating a salad made with lettuce and tomato might be overdoing it by his standards. You know, and I tried that. I tried that for about a summer, and it just, you know, I lost weight, but I don't feel like my blood sugar was in a good spot. I think my A1C was hovering around like 8.59, which, you know, that's fair, but it's not the best A1C.
No. And that's the other thing in all of this, for every person, you know, and I like that you highlight it, you know, in your specific situation, that what we do with our bodies has to be more about the bigger picture than just about seeing weight move, you know, mm-hmm. just about yep. seeing the scale move. Because like you said, you might have been able to continue doing that and seeing the scale move, but would that have been, had a positive impact on your health overall and your longevity in terms of your health?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, gosh, weight is such a touchy thing, because even 2 years into this journey, I still kind of get in my own head about the scale. But, you know, I know, hey, I'm getting in there, you know, I'm moving so much weight around in the gym that I know I'm packing on muscle. I know that joints on my body are swelling and they are holding on to water and whatever. So, but yeah, it's hard to kind of dissociate those two things of, you know, the scale's not moving, but at the same time, you know, this shirt is a lot looser than it was last week, you know, mm-hmm. but it's definitely a challenge.
And it speaks to the importance of learning and growing as you go on these journeys. Like, because if you didn't understand what was going on, that's one of those things that sometimes makes people say, this isn't working. Why am I even doing this? You know, why am I going in the gym and lifting weights X number of times a week? You know, the scale's not moving. What's really happening? You know, that's what I want to see happen. I'm not, you know, why do I feel this way after I do this? Why do I feel that way after that? I don't understand this. There's no way to figure it out. I'm just going to give up, instead of really learning. You know, and it's one of the things I work with people on, is like, what makes your body function the best? Like, what's going to be the ideal situation for you? And too often, I think people just want a blanket answer of, this is X, Y, and Z are the best things for every human being to do. Just go and do them. And it's not that clean. And I think for long-term success, you have to be willing to be a student and learn, and sometimes learn one thing that you thought you knew isn't exactly what you knew. And so, you know, new information came along, or you continue to grow through the process. Like, it's a really important piece of all of this.
Definitely. And I mean, there's so much discovery to it. I mean, if I sat down and I listed all the diets that I've been on, whether it's, you know, Atkins, keto, I was on Sugar Busters for a period of time. And then, oh God, that Fat Sick Nearly Dead documentary came out, and I ended up, me and my family, we bought a juicer, and I was like, yep, I'm going to survive on vegetable and fruit juice. Literally the second day of doing that, I was on the living room floor with my head in a bucket, because my body was like, this is not for you.
No, understood. And I haven't heard some of those names in a long time. Sugar Busters specifically made me chuckle, because I remember that. Oh, yeah. I remember when that one was big. So Jason, what are the things that you identify, you know, as the biggest challenges you face right now?
I would say right now is just, you know, not, I guess, getting out of my own head and kind of getting away from, like I just mentioned, that number on the scale is not necessarily an indicator of overall health. You know, when your doctor's, you know, giving you results of, hey, your cholesterol, you know, you no longer need cholesterol pills, you no longer need blood pressure medicine. You know, those are better indicators than that number on the scale, but it's still in the back of our mind because of our culture and weight is everything, size is everything. You know, it's still a struggle for me, because I'm still not at that spot where I could just walk into, you know, any random store like Old Navy and buy something off the rack. Cause you know, they don't stock sizes quite that big. You know, I have had a situation where, like, me and my family, we ate at a restaurant and they sold like really cool t-shirts, and they actually sold my size. And I was like, oh, wow, that's a win. I was able to buy like a novelty t-shirt somewhere, but it's still not, that's not typical. And so that's definitely a challenge, is still being at a bigger spot, where you can't fit in normal things. And that's something that me and my wife have been talking about a lot, is, when you're in this active community and you're a person of size, there's not a lot of supportive garments that they make for you. You know, a lot of those, just for an example, like boxer shorts for men that actually, that kind of have a little bit of support built in, there's nobody making that kind of stuff with moisture wicking and whatnot for people of size. Everything kind of cuts off at a 2X, 3X when, there's some of us who, might need a 5X who are more active and, could really benefit from some of those clothing items, But, so yeah, that's definitely a challenge of not, not still fitting in the mold. Like last time I flew on an airplane, I did Southwest, got the bonus seat that they give out to people and all, but it's still like, I wish that I didn't have to ask for a seatbelt extender. And I know that, probably one day along the way I will get to that point. I think a big challenge came up last year. We had went to Carowinds, which is our local like Cedar Fair owned park, because they have parks all over the country, and that's our local one. And there was a coaster there that I like really really wanted to ride, and I went to the test seat, and it was like, ain't no way that's happening. And it was to the point of, honestly, if I lose another 120 pounds, it still might not ever happen. So it. Those kind of things are still disheartening because the world just isn't built for one size fits all. It's just crazy.
Oh, and isn't that one of the, it's one of the things that I think there's raging debates about online, the whole idea, access. There are people that are opposed to athletic companies making bigger size clothing, because they feel like it somehow enables people to just continue to get bigger. Like instead of being realistic about the person, who's in your shoes, in my shoes, like in a lot of the people who are on this show's shoes, like if I had access to those materials, they would be supportive to me on this journey that I'm on. Like it's almost like it boggles my mind. Like I understand, and I'll be, I've said several times on this show, talking about the airline side of things, like because especially, Southwest has had the extra seat policy, the customer of size policy, for over a decade now, but for some reason it hit big in the news a couple months ago, and now it's like everyone's like, oh, they're giving out free seats to big people. Like, well, no, this has actually been a part of their policy for a long, long, long time, and most airlines don't do it, so it's not like all of a sudden they've changed something and they're giving something, putting something out there. They're allowing people to have access to something that most people take for granted, there's things we could kernel into on the debate on that issue specifically. But, I speaking for myself, like when I first discovered that they would do that, you had to, I was always willing to buy the second seat, and sometimes it would get refunded. Sometimes it wouldn't with their initial policy. And now it always gets refunded. But just that idea of understanding, like it's not asking someone to go above and beyond. It's asking for this equality of access when someone is, and again, then you get into like value judgments on like, well, yes, give those, give that extra, that 5X clothing to someone who is working on their health and don't give it to someone else. Like that's not what the debate is, should be about. Like it's that idea of, finding ways to access these things that aren't just those adaptations that keep us stuck where we're at, but are things that would just really give a little bit, if it takes a percentage point of ease off of this hard battle that a person is fighting already, I feel like there's no detriment to that. There's no, and yes, there, of course, those companies come back and they're like, well, we don't know how to adapt this, because you also know, we could probably sit here and just talk about like big and tall men's clothing in general. The fact that they have no idea how to handle like the human anatomy of a bigger person.
Yeah.
They don't. Shirts, like I remember when I was, wearing like an 8XL shirt, and the 8XL shirt, sometimes they would be shorter than, a 5 or a 6X that I had. And it's like, no, we're not all cartoon characters that just grow wider. Our bodies have dimensions, and that lack of understanding and lack of consistency. And, women deal with this a lot too in plus size clothing, but men do too. you know, you can go and buy two 5X shirts, two 6X shirts, two 3X shirts, and they are completely different sized. Like,
absolutely.
The fit is completely different, you know, and not because one is, like, listed as, like, athletic cut or whatever. It's like they just don't understand how the body works. You know, when you have a shirt that's big enough to cover your stomach, it means it thinks that your chest and shoulders and everything is the same exact size, so you're swimming on top, or vice versa. Like, it's hard to navigate that, you know, as that bigger person who is saying, hey, you know, like, you know, and I understand, like, the position you're in, like, hey, look, you know, I'm down 150 pounds and I'm just looking for these things to continue to support me on my journey, and they're not there, or running into, like, literal walls sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. And big and tall stores, I hate big and tall stores, because, you know, the most popular chain, it's wild because it's in their name, big and tall. But I say there's no such thing, because I'm 6'3", and I can get clothes that are wide enough, sure. I cannot get clothes that are tall enough for me, that are, because it feels like that a lot of the products that they have, they just tap out of tall sizes at 4X. Like, they don't assume that somebody's going to be a 6X tall. And so it's non-existent. You know, I remember when I was working in the school system, they had decided that all employees needed to have a uniform, which, you know, that was just a horrible thought, because I knew that it wasn't going to end up good, and it didn't end up good. So they bring me this, like, 7XL polo shirt, and I swear to you, like, if I lifted my hands, the sleeves were, like, big enough to fit a basketball through, and it was like I had angel wings or something. And I, you know, so I went to my boss, and I was like, I'm not comfortable wearing this. Can I just, like, go buy my own clothes, as long as I look professional and call it good? And of course they, you know, were good with that, but it's crazy, the sizing out there. And it's wild that there's people who actually have that mindset that just because you're bigger, you shouldn't dress in a way that's comfortable or make you confident and that sort of thing. You know, I see my own wife kind of, like, battle with that, and she's very passionate about, you know, showing her fashion and all that kind of stuff, which, I mean, she's probably got way too many clothes than anybody should own, but, you know.
Yeah, it's one of the realities of navigating the challenges of being in a bigger body, and it doesn't, not producing the materials or, you know, the clothing sizes or the proper fits doesn't make the bigger bodies go away. You know, it doesn't erase people from the world as much as sometimes, you know, I think some people might like that to happen. You know, it just, the fact that they, like you said, with tall sizing, stopping at 4XL T, you know, doesn't mean that there aren't people that need a basic human need. You know, clothing, it's not like clothing is this special magical thing that only certain people should have access to. Like, clothing is you need to have clothes, you know, no shirt, no shoes, no service. Like, you need to have, excuse me, maybe it sounds silly to some people listening, like, but it is sometimes a reality. Like, that lack of access has an impact, and those are all things that take up mental space. Like, and, you know, as you're talking about that as a challenge, like, I'm curious, because I think we talk about, you know, what the actual challenges are. Like, how do you feel like you navigate that challenge? Like, what helps you be able to identify it for what it is and be able to move through it?
You know, I think for me, it's just kind of like really doing my own digging, trying to figure out, you know, what I can do to kind of help myself. Like, I've got my wife actually designed me a couple of different shirts, kind of like for my workout journey, with this whole, like, beast idea. And so she kind of designed them. We had a friend print them. And so really kind of navigate that, and to the point of, hey, we're going to come up with our own clothing, you know? But yeah, just navigating and getting around all of that. It's definitely hard. It takes a lot of effort to kind of, like, figure out what works and doesn't work. You know, at one point I had gotten to such a large size that even the stuff at the chain Big and Tall store did not fit. So I was like ordering from like mail order from this other company, like king size or whatever. And their stuff was like, oh my gosh, their stuff was the worst. Cause you talk about stuff not fitting right. You'd order it and you'd have no idea what you were going to get. So just learning kind of like what works, and honestly, I'm thankful that I'm at a spot now where I can pretty much go on Amazon and order just about anything I need in my size. It might, you know, might take a little longer than 2 days to get to me, but I know that I can, you know, access what I need. It might not be exactly what I want, but it'll be somewhat comparable. But yeah, when I was, obviously when I was at a heavier size, it was near impossible to just fit in fashion wise or, you know, really be comfortable. It was, you know, oversized sweatsuit pants, oversized shorts, you know, and if you're lucky, maybe you can get a comic book t-shirt from the Big and Tall store. Mm-hmm. But who knows, you know?
Well, I mean, and I feel like I could go off on a 30-minute rant on king size alone. Like, to order two shirts in a different color, same brand, same exact shirt, and they just arrive in their different material, different sizes, like, it's wild, you know, never mind the fact that, you know, when I used to shop for at king size, because I was too big for DXL or casual male, as it was known then, it would take 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks for shipping. So there's no, I need this right away. You know, I just found out, I had times in my life where funerals would happen and I didn't have a dress shirt that was big enough. And the only option to find a dress shirt big enough was king size, and it was never going to arrive in time. Like, it's that access piece. So, you know, coming through those challenges, like, you know, we're also hearing, like, the good things that are going on for you, you know, the progress you're making, not just on the scale, but the progress you're making in terms of, you know, learning about your health and taking it seriously and your excitement for the gym. A lot of that's translating for you now, you know, nowadays into, you know, wanting to put that message out there to other people and support other people.
Absolutely.
So what does that look like? Cause I know, like, you've just even recently got, you know, dipped your toes into, you know, coaching and some things along those lines. Like, what do things look like for you now in that area in terms of like your perspective on helping other people?
Yeah. So, you know, honestly, if we back it, you know, back it all the way back up to high school, I feel like, you know, if a PE teacher had been like, this is a weight, you know, you can do this with it, I would have been like, oh, okay, this is cool. You know, cause I'm not, you know, I wasn't in the body to go around kicking a soccer ball and keeping up with the speed of other kids. So I kind of want to be that person to walk alongside, regular people and help them get to that point. You know, I think about, you know, making fitness accessible. And I feel like they put up so many barriers in society to fitness. But, so step one was back in January, I got my certified personal training certificate, through ISSA, which was, you know, fantastic. It was great. You know, not only am I learning how to help other people, but I was able to take that into the gym for myself and learn, okay, you know, oh, I've been doing this exercise wrong for the past 2 years, so, all right, let me do it right now. You know, and also kind of like learning, you know, it's okay to push yourself a little bit more and, you know, that rate of, you know, how much weight to go up every week and that sort of thing. So it was, you know, beneficial for myself, but I've also learned, you know, more about nutrition, more about coaching. And so I wanted to apply that, to definitely help some other people. So I've got a few clients. It's obviously, it's something I do on the side. It's not my full-time job. So, I only, you know, only have a few clients right at the moment. I've got, you know, one that I meet with in person, and I've got a couple that are online, and, just kind of helping to guide them. I've got, you know, folks who are, you know, overweight. I've got folks who are, you know, dealing with type 2 diabetes, and so I'm able to kind of, you know, give some of my knowledge, you know, to them and help them make changes And so it's been good. But, you know, we haven't seen a whole lot of change because, like I said, I've just pretty much dipped my toes into it in January. And I think I've been working with these clients a total of, you know, maybe 3 weeks now. Mm-hmm. So we're still in the beginnings nice. Of it.
Hey, it all starts somewhere. So
yeah,
that's great to hear, man. So, Jason, kind of coming through, you know, this your journey to the point that you're at now, like, what are... You know, I know you talked about, you know, a weight goal already. Like, what are the other goals for yourself, you know, in this, you know, health and fitness space that you feel like you're focused on as you move forward?
Yeah. I definitely want to get stronger. I want to gain muscle. I want to be able to, you know, get some movement in that I've not been able to do. I kind of have like, a shoulder issue in my left shoulder. So I've been going to physical therapy to try to deal with that. Cause I've, you know, throughout this whole journey, I've never been able to do a proper squat because I can't get my left arm to go in the position it needs to go for me to hold that bar. So I've always got to do either I've got to use the box squat pad it's probably not the official name for it, or use the hack squat machine or something like that. So it'd be nice to get to that point where I can do a proper squat and then start, you know, adding the weight to that. I definitely want to see my deadlift PR increase because, like, right now I'm at 364, and I want to see that number go up because I eventually would love to, you know, a few years down the road, you know, compete in some powerlifting competitions or something. And I know I'm like a long way off from that because I know this is all stuff that takes time and a lot of training dedication, but one day I'd like to see it happen. You know, I've even got aspirations of, you know, it'd be cool to pull a car down the street, you know, with my shoulders and arms, but, you know, just taking it one day at a time here.
And you share your work, you know, a lot of the times, you know, you're sharing your, not just your gym check-ins, but, you know, video of the lifts you're doing and all of these aspects of your journey, you know, talking about food and products you're using that help and support you. Like, if people listening to this episode want to follow along, you know, and connect with you, where do they find you best, man?
Definitely Instagram. It's pretty much what I know best. I've got a Facebook, I've got a TikTok, don't really post as much over there. So I'm pretty much solely on Instagram at my Instagram handle, T1JediAbetic.
Which I will be sure to put in the show notes of the episode today so people can track that down. Jason, is there anything, you know, in all of this we've been talking about or any topics, like on whether it's related to your journey or just what, you know, all the people out there going on similar journeys or going through that we haven't talked about yet today that you wanted to make sure that we covered?
You know, I think one of the big things that has helped me is just staying consistent and showing up. Now, that doesn't mean that along the way we haven't gone through seasons where things have been a little bit more difficult. You know, I'm thinking, you know, like last year towards the end of the year, I had a really difficult season, and honestly, like, my mental health was in the toilet, and I got to the point where I went probably about a month and a half and I didn't track my calories. I was still going to the gym. I was still showing up every day just because I love it so much. But, you know, my nutrition got away from me and I was eating, you know, just whatever I wanted to eat. I think on Christmas Day, it kind of came to a head where my blood sugar almost reached 500. And I was like, okay, enough is enough. I've got to get back on point because, you know, for those of you who don't know, when you have diabetes and your blood sugar gets really above, like, 250, you just feel miserable. You're hot, you're sweaty, you're irritable. You can turn up a gallon of water and still be thirsty. It's a mess to be in. So it just kind of came to a head and I realized, you know, I've got to get back on track. But it's that still, even though I wasn't feeling my best, I was still showing up at the gym every single day. And then I did find myself back on track nutritionally. So I think just keeping that consistency, you know, knowing that there might be seasons where things aren't perfect, but you're still making the changes. You're still striving to you know, be a better person than you were yesterday.
Which, and I think a lot of that comes from the work you've done, you know, on educating yourself and mindfulness and being in touch with how these things make you feel and how good you feel in the gym. Because I think, and, you know, and again, you can correct me if you don't relate to this or not, but I can think of those periods in my life when those off seasons became off years and off decades. It was because I allowed myself to go back into that place of, you know, intentional unawareness, intentionally ignoring the things that weren't great, the things that weren't feeling good, you know, just, and accepting that the not feeling good. Like, I think when we stay in that place, you know, I went through that myself. Like, I can't count the number of times in my life that I would start, you know, a new diet or a weight loss plan or something along those lines and go really hard for a few months and things are going really great and have that off, you know, and usually it wasn't intentional, like, oh, I'm going to have a cheat meal or a cheat day or something along those lines. That would then just lead to a few more years before I would come back to anything. Like, and in, you know, 2017, when I first got started on what I consider, you know, this journey, I went off for a month and I came back because I was aware, I stayed aware of how crappy I felt. And I kept kind of pushing, hoping that that crappy would go away, but I knew that it wasn't. And, like, you know, very similar to what you were talking about, I kept going to the gym during that time. And I started to realize over that month that going to the gym was getting harder. So that, because I had this part of me that was like, well, maybe, you know, if I just keep going to the gym, you know, everything will even itself out and I'll still feel good. And that just never happened. But it was having to stay in that place of awareness of how these things I was doing consistently were being impacted by the things that I wasn't doing consistently in the end had that great impact. So, but I think that's a great thing for people to hear, is to understand that no one's journey is this straight slope down. No one's journey is this, no, you know, it all looks more like the sound waves I'm going to edit when I edit this episode, you know, peaks mm-hmm. and valleys, but it's about that progression over time. And that progression comes through being consistent. So I love hearing that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's been times in my life where I've got that mindset of all or nothing. And I think a lot of humans do. So it's like, oh, well, it's Friday night and I've ate pizza. So, well, crap, I might as well eat some cupcakes on Saturday and eat some Cinnamon Toast Crunch on Sunday because, well, you know, I've done messed up my diet now. We'll get back on track Monday. And it just becomes that cycle. And I think that's where I was for a lot of time, because you don't make room for, you know, off days. And I mean, the reality is, okay, people are going to have birthdays and you can make the choice to eat that slice of cake, or, you know, you can, you know, continue to deprive yourself to the point where eventually you're going to break down and, you know, you're going to eat the whole cake. It's because you didn't allow yourself little treats here and there. So it's got to be something. Nutrition has got to be something that you can stick with mm-hmm. for the rest of your life. It cannot be this, hey, I'm going to do this for 3 years and get the weight off, because it's not going to stay off like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the one mindset that I think people screw up, you know, for the most, you know, the most. It's the idea of, I'm going to make this change until I get to a certain point and then everything will be magically better. You know, it's, you got to build a lifestyle that's sustainable. And even if that includes those moments that don't quote unquote look clean, like, that's fine. Like, understand, you know, and understand that it was many days in a row of not taking care of yourself that got us to the point that we were at. It wasn't, you know, 10 to 15 days of doing great. And then one day that wasn't so great. And then 10 more days that we're doing great. Like, that wasn't what that time looked like at all. It wasn't just an off step here or there that led to our challenges. It was living a life that was off step.
Yeah. Yeah. And that even relates to diabetes. Cause, you know, my endocrinologist, cause I wear a CGM, a Dexcom, you know, she can go in and see my blood sugars at any time, but, you know, she's not concerned with a couple of 300s here and there. She's not concerned with a couple of, you know, 40s here and there. It's the A1C, it's the overall of, you know, what is this averaged out to for the past 3 months?
100%, man. Well, Jason, I have really enjoyed this discussion. I end every episode with five questions I call the Fat Guy Five. Are you ready for your run through those questions?
Sure.
Okay. So question number one, living or dead, who is your favorite fat guy?
Ooh, living or dead? Oh, that's a tough one. I'll have to go. I'm torn between John Candy or Chris Farley. I'm gonna go with Chris Farley.
A check in the Chris Farley column. Understood. He's probably the number one answer I get. So you're in good company.
I can imagine. Yeah.
you're in good company. Jason, question number two. What is something about yourself that you love?
Something about myself that I love. Right now, it's my strength. Mm. Love my strength.
Love that. Question number three, and I might be able to predict the answer to this one, but I'll let you answer it. Thinking about this journey you've been on, man, what has been the most important new habit you've built?
Most important new habit. You probably would think I would say the gym, but it would actually be tracking my food and being intentional to make sure that I know what I'm eating, because it's easy to just eat and not be aware of what's going into your body.
Understood. Question number four, man. What is one goal you have for the next year that is not health, fitness, or weight loss related?
I'd like to find my way into a way to make enough money to live comfortably, but also enjoy that particular career, not feel like I'm selling my soul for that paycheck.
I like it. I think a lot of people can relate to that one. And question number five, man, last official podcast of the main show. Last official question of the main show. What is, if you could go back in time and talk to Jason when he was getting started on this journey 2 years ago, what do you feel is a message he needed to hear?
Stick with it.
I like it. Well, Jason, I want to say a big thank you for coming on the show and sharing your experiences with us today and your perspective on a lot of these great topics we get into. Just a big thank you, man.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. It's been great.
Definitely. And like I said, Jason's information will be in the show notes of the episode, so connect with him and follow that Instagram. You can connect with me on Instagram at GourmetGoesKeto, on X at GourmetGoesKeto. You can email the show at thefatguyforum@gmail.com. And Jason and I are not done talking. We're going to go spend a couple minutes together on the Patreon after show. So if you are not in the Patreon, get signed up for that. It helps keep the show going, and you get some bonus content. There's almost over 60 episodes, bonus episodes over there now. So catch those continued discussions after every main show. And after you're done doing all that, my friends, remember, go out there, do something today to amaze yourselves, because you're the most amazing people I know. Then catch us on the next episode of the Fat Guy Forum.